Welcome, everybody, to the bi-week edition of Giants Goal Line, our Giants podcast here at SNY.TV. I'm Ralph Bacchiano, the NFL insider for SNY, and happy to have you join me for what is a happy Giants podcast, I guess. They're 4-3 heading into the bye. All that angst that you may have had when they were sitting at 2-3 and struggling after losses to the Vikings and the Packers suddenly has been replaced by optimism. I realize that they are still the last place Giants, but things are pretty tight in the NFC East. The 4-3 gives you a great chance for a playoff run, no doubt about that. And, you know, the Giants certainly have been underachieving. So everything right now is in front of them, and we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to get into where the Giants are in the bye week and whether they really are in good shape or this is just a mirage. We'll talk a little bit about really what the heck has happened to their offense, which is just what a mess it was in that win over the Rams on Sunday in London. Certainly unexpectedly bad. And we'll talk a little bit about something that has become, I'd say, a hot button issue, especially on Twitter, although I hate to just use that as a judge of fans' opinion, but it is what it is. People have been griping about Ben McAdoo's play calling, so we'll get into a little bit whether it's his play calling that's the problem or the execution by his players. And we will also touch on the still bubbling Josh Brown mess. As you know, he has now been placed on the commissioner's exempt list, especially which is essentially paid leave. That's a result of the documents that SNY uncovered last week that showed basically he has admitted to instances of domestic violence, that there were more instances than maybe the NFL knew. And also, as John Mara admitted, that Josh Brown had told the Giants that he abused his wife, making it an even messier situation from their end. We'll get into a little bit of that with Andrew Brandt, who is a former NFL agent and a former NFL executive who worked for the Green Bay Packers, now works for ESPN and the Monday Morning Quarterback at SI.com and a million other places. We'll get his insider's view on the difficulties of handling a situation like that from somebody who did work for a team. I think it's not as black and white as sometimes we like to make it out to be. One quick programming note before we begin. If you're a fan of the Mets, Jets, Giants, Knicks, Rangers, or Islanders, and you want to listen to all of our original podcasts all in one place, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts. However, if you just want to listen to this podcast week by week, search SNY.TV Giants wherever you listen to your podcasts and make sure you click subscribe and please rate and review our channel. All right, let's get into the big headlines for, I guess it's week 8 now. The Giants are 4-3. They are off this week. They have returned from London after a narrow and ugly win over the Los Angeles Rams. I'm going to be doing that a lot, by the way. Until I get used to the Rams being back in Los Angeles. But it is the Los Angeles Rams. And, well, what kind of shape are the Giants in heading into the bye week? That's headline number one. They are 4-3. No doubt that is good. They are in last place. No doubt that is bad. They won two in a row, which gives them some momentum, but they certainly have looked pretty terribly doing it. And here's the general overview of where the Giants are, which is basically in this league, I've said this before, there are two or three teams at the top, two or three teams at the bottom, and everybody else is just jammed somewhere in the middle. And if you can get any kind of momentum at all, you are in good shape as long as you can stay healthy. And when the Giants come out of the bye, they've still got some big games coming up and a chance to make up some ground. They've got another game against the Cowboys, another game against the Redskins, a couple against the Eagles, who they haven't seen yet. It's not a horribly difficult schedule that they're going to be facing the rest of the way. And the best part for them is they've been underachieving. You have not seen, we'll get to the offense in a minute, which is underachieving in ways that I don't think any of us ever even imagined. But on defense, we just started to see signs of their pass rush coming through against the Rams on Sunday. That's the $200 million defense and the pass rush, which took most of that money, that has barely sacked the quarterback this season. If that starts to come alive, all of a sudden that defense, as you saw against the Rams, becomes turnover happy. Things can happen. They can make game-changing plays, and that could change the whole outlook for this Giants team. You add in the fact that, you know, I don't know that we've seen the real Odell Beckham, Eli Manning combination other than the one explosion game that Odell had. There's certainly a lot more that they can do. They have barely run the ball, and we saw at the end of the last season that they do have that ability to run the ball. We have not seen the best of Victor Cruz and Sterling Shepard. So many things that the Giants haven't done yet that you have to believe at some point they will do. It puts them in a bit of a power position, I think, heading into the bye. That, you know, they, when they come out of it, they've got a week to self-scout, to look at what's gone wrong, what's gone right. And, you know, all they have to do is improve a little bit. And in this mediocre division and mostly a mediocre conference, you know, they could go on a little bit of a run. And if they get themselves to 9-10 wins, they are in the hunt for the division title. They're definitely in the playoffs. And, boy, even if it's 9-7, you will certainly take that after the misery of the last 4 years. So 4-3 heading into the bye, especially after 2-3, you'll take it. But really, in the first weeks of the Ben McAdoo era, the Giants are in outstanding shape heading into the midpoint and then the stretch run of the season. Now, there are issues, though, and that brings us to headline number two, which is, what the heck has happened to the Giants offense? This was a top 10 offense the last 2 years under Ben McAdoo. They have a quarterback that, I know some of you don't like to think this, but he is an elite quarterback. He is as good as, oh, I'd put him in the top 10. I don't think there's any argument you have to put him in the top half of the league, but definitely I'd put him in the top 10, sometimes higher. He has one of the two, three, four best receivers in the NFL at his disposal, and it's just been a mess. And they, on Sunday against the Rams, they could barely put together any drives on offense. They certainly couldn't get any big plays. You're not seeing yards after the catch by their receivers. You're seeing this cover two shell that defenses are playing, which is limiting Odell Beckham's explosive ability, which is limiting yards after the catch for the most part for their receivers and forcing them to play a game underneath, essentially. A lot of dump-offs, a lot of short passes, which has fans yelling about the play calling. We'll get to that in a minute. But basically, they're not playing their game, and they haven't been able to take advantage. Their playmakers, essentially, are not making plays when they throw those short passes. And I think that is a part of the problem that the Victor Cruzes and Sterling Shepherds and Bobby Rainey and Rashad Jennings have to be better with the ball in their hands. They are supposed to be an explosive group, a talented group. And when they get the ball 5 yards downfield, they can't just go down and be tackled. They need to be able to stretch that into something big. We saw that mostly against the Ravens, and that had something to do with the defense as well. But the Giants seem to be just playing right into the hands of the defense right now, and that's a bit of an issue. The other thing is, and I know in some places they are getting good grades and they are getting praised, but this offensive line to me continues to be a major problem. If you watch it, even in plays where they're maybe not giving up what someone would call pressures, the rush is getting through fast enough that Eli Manning has no choice but to throw a dump-off pass. There's no time for Odell Beckham or Victor Cruz or Sterling Shepard to get down the field, and it's taking away that deep game. And just the threat of that with Eli Manning not having any time and the defense is playing this shell coverage because they can, I don't think that the Giants are threatening anymore to be that deep team, and it's making them extremely one-dimensional. They're also extremely unbalanced. They barely even try to run the ball anymore, and that's becoming an issue too. So essentially, to me, the problem with the offense is they are becoming very, very easy to defend, and the only way for them to break through that is if the playmakers start doing unexpected things, get the ball in their hands on a short play, turn it into a big play, something we know they can do but haven't seen much of this year. Which brings me to headline number three, which is Ben McAdoo's play calling, which fans are pretty tired of seeing. And there was a lot on my Twitter feed on Sunday, a lot of angst about dump-off passes. Why isn't he going downfield? Why is he throwing these quick out passes to the side, these swing passes, the bubble screens, and things like that? Why are they not running the ball more? All of that is fair, but to me, you have to look beyond the play call and see what's working and what's not. Larry Donnell, on the second play of the game, fumbles the ball on a play that would have worked. I watched Victor Cruz drop a pass on a first down on a play that would have worked. I watched obvious wrong routes being run, or at least not what the quarterback thought was going to happen. We saw runs and draws, and I know fans sometimes hate draws, that would have worked, but the tight ends or sometimes the offensive linemen just fanned on blocks and they were blown up at the line of scrimmage. There was a famous quote a couple of years ago from Tom Coughlin when the offensive line was a disaster and things weren't going well and somebody questioned the play calling, and Tom Coughlin defended Kevin Gilbride, his then offensive coordinator, by saying that right now the way they were playing, calling plays was like throwing darts at a dartboard. And I think this is where Ben McAdoo is right now. He tries some things that should work. Sometimes those outside screens, those bubble screens, those swing passes would work perfectly if one person would make their block, but they don't and the play gets blown up. So you can't go outside and trust those receivers to do that. You try to go inside and you watch the offensive lineman get overwhelmed. They can't do that. You want to go deep, but Eli Manning has no time to throw it. You want to go short and Larry Donnell fumbles or Victor Cruz drops the ball. His play calling isn't perfect, but if the players would actually execute the plays, his play calling would look a lot better. The one thing that I would give you on his play calling is his team is horribly unbalanced. He now looks like he's afraid to run the ball, which is a big, big problem. He might be right about that because, quite frankly, this team stinks running the ball, and maybe that'll change. I think Paul Perkins, their rookie who looks pretty good, is going to get a little more time coming back after the bye week. But regardless, Ben McAdoo, it's almost in the last, really since the first two games of the season, it's been more than 2-1 pass to run. And when you are doing that, teams know, they absolutely know they don't have to respect the run, and they're able to sit back in that shell. So that shell defense that has really confounded the Giants' passing game, that's all because they can't establish the run and they're letting teams sit back instead of drawing them to the line of scrimmage. Ben McAdoo can alleviate that by running more, finding ways to run more effectively, and sticking with it, even if it's not working. A lot of coaches will tell you, sometimes you just run the ball just to let teams know that I will run it, so you have to respect it. I don't think I changed any minds there because I know everybody wants to pick on the play calling. It's easy enough, but we'll leave it at there. And certainly you can tweet to me your comments about the play calling at @rvacchianosny, and I'm sure you will. Anyway, those are the three headlines. Right now we're going to switch over to what has been a bigger headline for the Giants over the last week, which is this Josh Brown mess. And I won't recap the whole thing for you, but as you know, he had been suspended for one game because he had been arrested on domestic violence charges. And soon after that, documents came out in a lot of places and here at SNY that said his wife had accused him of more than 20 instances of domestic violence. Last week, SNY uncovered more documents that showed Josh Brown had admitted in emails and diaries that he abused his wife, that the NFL was aware of another incident that we didn't know about at the Pro Bowl last January. The Giants then, John Mara went on the radio and admitted that Josh Brown admitted to him that he had abused his wife. And the mess continues on. The NFL stepped in, put Josh Brown on the commissioner's exempt list, which is essentially paid leave. I don't think Josh Brown will ever kick again for the Giants, and a lot of people don't think he should. A lot of people, including myself, think the Giants have completely botched this, but I might argue it's a little more difficult to assess how they did, and if we were in that position as an executive, it might not be easy to figure out the best way to handle this. So I decided to turn to somebody who might know a lot better than me, and that's Andrew Brandt, who, as I said earlier, works for ESPN now, is also a writer for the Monday Morning Quarterback, the National Football Post. He's a former general manager in the World League, a former vice president of the Green Bay Packers, and a former NFL agent. He joins us now to help me sort through this from the team and league side of things. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ralph. It just seems like we're in a replay from 2014, aren't we?
Yes, we are. It seems like we are caught in a loop that never seems to end. And, of course, that's why I wanted to get your insight in this. You know, obviously, we're talking about the Josh Brown situation. And for some reason, it just feels like the NFL and the teams can never quite get it right when it comes to domestic violence. But I was wondering, you know, from your position as, you know, both on the player side and as a former executive with a team,
right?
I assume it's more complicated. And I know Roger Goodell got a little heat for saying this, that, you know, fans necessarily can't understand everything that's going on. But it must be a little bit more complicated for teams trying to figure out exactly what to do, or is it, or should it be more black and white than it is?
Well, I do think you're right in that when these things happen, in my situation, when I got calls about misbehavior from the league, and I brought in my group together with the team, and I was with the Packers for 10 years, and then my call would be to the league and talk about what do you think's happening and sort of coordinate how are we going to deal with this discipline-wise and whether we're going to take the lead, the team, or leave it to the league. What just seems to be happening so often, and this is exactly the case with Ray Rice and Josh Brown, is that the teams have applied zero discipline in these cases. In fact, supported the player throughout. And it's the league that's sort of left to discipline. And in both cases, as we know, the discipline was too soft, too light, too lenient, and there was a reaction in Rice, which became an indefinite suspension, and then we expect a further reaction with Josh Brown over the one-game suspension. So it just seems like what we're doing now, and I don't remember this as much in my day, where the teams are kind of, well, we'll leave it to Roger. You know, he'll handle it, because he has become, as everyone listening knows, this conduct commissioner, and because of that, he just seems to be the one doing all the conduct.
And that might end up being the source of the problem. Should teams be more proactive in the discipline? And honestly, can they? Because at some point, I would imagine the union is going to want to have a say in the disciplining of their players.
Well, first on the union, of course they are, and the union is always it's underreported on Josh Brown, but they appealed a one-game suspension and lost, and we would expect they would appeal, A, the commissioner exemplis placement, which will happen in the next day or so, and B, any further discipline, just as they did with Rice. But with teams, it just seems like, as I said, there's this hesitance. And yes, I think it's difficult for a team to sort of have a player on its roster paying him with a suspension. There's just that awkwardness, and I understand it. But here's a little known fact about team discipline versus league discipline. If a team disciplines a player and it goes to arbitration with the union, that's an independent arbitrator.
Oh.
If the league does it, it's Commissioner Goodell, which would also seem like, why wouldn't the team get involved? But I go back to what I just said. Teams may be hesitant to discipline one of their own, especially with John Mara having been so supportive here about Josh Brown's personal problems. So that seems an awkward situation.
I certainly think there were a couple of things at play. I think John Mara is a good man, and I don't believe that he did anything malicious. I think sometimes he makes mistakes in these things. I think part of his mistake was he did want to be supportive of a player and a person and see if he could help him, which, you know, may or may not have been the right thing to do in this case. But I think also when the NFL did hand down its one-game suspension, some people in the Giants thought that was light, but there seemed to be a feeling of that, well, if they had done anything else, it would have looked a little like a slap in the face of Roger Goodell, of basically them saying, Roger Goodell didn't get this right, we'll take care of it. And I would imagine they would be very careful about doing something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think what we keep getting back to, though, is that, and I know you're going to ask me about this, so I'll anticipate it. We thought we had a six-game baseline, and that's the feature of the new policy in reaction to Rice and Peterson and Hardy 2 years ago. Somehow, some way, this became a one-game baseline for Josh Brown. Now, we do hear in the fine print about mitigating circumstances for these things, but how much mitigating circumstances were there with Josh Brown when we know that John Mara knew about abuse, we know that the league and team knew about a Pro Bowl incident where Josh Brown had to be removed from his ex-wife and put in different rooms, and we knew, even if the benefit of the doubt, they didn't know what's coming out of the state of Washington, that there's just enough evidence. It's, again, like Ray Rice in the second video, the question has to be asked, what exactly are you learning from this that you didn't know? So it's not a good look for the team or the league, if only for the reason that this was an area that has been made a priority for the league, and it just seems to be ignored, which raises the specter of, why do we have this harsh new policy if it's not being applied?
Well, that was one of my next questions of why would they have this policy? It seemed like it came out with this six-game baseline to have show people some force behind it. They were going to be very strict with this. Yes, there was fine print, but you wouldn't think it would be used in a case where you have obvious knowledge of multiple incidents and apparently an admission to the team. It doesn't seem like there's mitigating circumstances there at all.
Yeah, and you wonder what the union argued to try to reduce the one-game suspension, and what tells you, of course, they'll be back if there's further discipline.
Sure.
And this whole idea of double jeopardy. And what, again, anticipating a union response, we may have the specter that we had in 2014 where Ray Rice is on the stand saying, oh, yeah, I told everybody I hit her. And Josh Brown may be on the stand saying, oh, yeah, everybody knew, which actually helps his case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a weird thing. I don't know, Ralph, what is involved with the mitigating circumstances for six games. It just, listen, the response in 2014 was strong. They hired Lisa Friel, the DA's office, head of sex crimes prosecution in New York City. They hired Cynthia Hogan, the head of who wrote the Violence Against Women Act from D.C. They hired domestic violence counselors. We thought the investigations would be crackerjack, not what we heard about in the state of Washington, where some guy without an NFL identification called up asking for information. They have to get it right, and it is such an important issue. You do see other owners coming out, like the Crafts, saying zero tolerance, but it just seems like we shouldn't be here again.
And, you know, you mentioned all the things they did in 2014 and all the people they added. Even before that, there was this legend of what NFL and team security is like, how they dug under every rock they could find on kids that they drafted and went back to their high school friends. And, you know, there was never any surprises. How are there so many surprises if they have all of these great investigators and seem like they've hired the right people? How is it possible that time after time the media uncovers information that the NFL can't seem to get on its own?
Well, two points to that. Number one, in sort of a defense, I'm a lawyer, and I know that there are restrictions on what's allowable and what's not allowable and all the things you have to go through legally to get access. I understand that. I get it. But number two, it seems like media is able to get these things. And if media is able to get it, why can't the NFL get it? And again, I was on the show on ESPN with the King County Sheriff last Friday, and he basically said, yeah, I mean, they asked for it, and I would, but if someone just called me, and I would have off the record said, you know, this is something you need to be worried about. And he admitted as such. And the thing you mentioned, these are all cops. I mean, I had it in Green Bay. I mean, maybe the Giants security staff, everyone's an ex-cop, ex-FBI, et cetera. Maybe they don't personally know the King County people in the state of Washington, but I'm sure the Seahawks people do. And there's just this network where you think, why is this happening? You know, what are they not finding out that we're reading about? So again, two parts. One, I'm a lawyer. I'm sensitive to the fact these are personal therapy journals that came out about Josh Brown. On the other hand, everyone else is getting access.
Right.
Why can't the NFL?
Yeah, it is amazing, and it creates a terrible look for the NFL, no doubt. And you keep hoping maybe they've learned from it and things will change for the next time. Of course, you don't want there to be a next time, but unfortunately, the way things go, you know there probably will be. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. A great insight as always.
Thanks so much, Ralph. Happy to be with you.
All right. My thanks to Andrew Brandt. And again, you can follow him on Twitter at Andrew Brandt. You can also watch him on ESPN, read his stuff on SI.com's Monday Morning Quarterback. And he's everywhere. So check him out. He gives some great insight. We really appreciate him joining us on this podcast. Next up on Giants goal line, let's look around the division a little bit and break down the NFC East. We talked earlier about where the Giants stand at the bye week, so let's really look at it. Obviously, they're sitting in last place, and that's certainly not ideal, but at 4-3, you know, they're only a half game behind the Philadelphia Eagles. They're tied with the Redskins, who they obviously lost to. Then the Dallas Cowboys, who were on a bye this week, are currently the team to beat, I guess, at 5-1, and probably the most likely team to pull away. And really, they're only a couple of games ahead of the Giants in the loss column, so even that's not an insurmountable thing at this stage of the season, considering the Giants have beaten them once and play them again. What makes the Cowboys difficult, of course, is they are built better than any team in the NFC East, and whether they get Tony Romo back or not, let's assume for a second that Dak Prescott is their quarterback. I still believe that as a rookie quarterback, he will regress a little bit at some point, but I don't know that that's going to make a difference for the Cowboys. They're playing defense well, and most importantly, it's old school, but it's the way to build a football team. They built that offensive line into a powerhouse, so whoever is back there at quarterback has time to find weapons. They, by the way, have been without Dez Bryant, who's going to come back and make their offense even more dangerous for whoever the quarterback is. But Ezekiel Elliott is having an all-pro type of season as a rookie, in large part because of that offensive line. It's something I've harped on for three or four seasons now, but it's a lesson to the rest of the league that that is the way you build a football team. You have to have a quarterback, you need guys on the other side of the ball who can disrupt a quarterback, and you got to protect that quarterback from those other guys on the other side of the ball. And when you do that, you just see the difference. And look at the Giants. They can't run the ball short yardage. Eli Manning is rushing like crazy when he throws. He's by far a better quarterback than Dak Prescott. Right now they've got by far better weapons, but they can't utilize them because he doesn't have any time, because they can't balance their offense with a run. The Cowboys, with inferior weapons, can do all of that because of those five guys up front. That makes them dangerous. And while I do think that if they stick with Dak Prescott, or really even if Tony Romo comes back, there'll be a couple of games where their quarterback costs them. I think that that offensive line is so good. With a 5-1 head start, it's really hard to see them. I mean, 10 games left, is it? I think it's fair to say they're not going to go worse than 5-5 the rest of the way. And right there, there's your 10th win. They might even end up being better than that. They've given them such a good boost heading into, well, nearly the second half of the season. You're going to have to get at least 11 wins, I think, if you want to pass them, 10 wins to tie them. And that Cowboy team right now has to be the odds-on favorite to win the NFC East. Who their challenger will be is really a matter of perspective. I was ready to bury the Eagles, honestly, heading into this past week. 3-2. They lost a couple of games. Carson Wentz has started to take a step back. They got a big break to me. The Eagles ended up beating the Vikings this past weekend 21-10. But Sam Bradford, the ex-Eagle quarterback, current Viking quarterback, again, looked like the Sam Bradford we've come to know over the years. And that was a big boost for the Philadelphia Eagles. It got them to 4-2. I still think, looking at them, they have some flaws that they have played a little over their head, in part because of the boost that Carson Wentz had given them. And I believe that they're not going to be the biggest challengers to the Dallas Cowboys. I do think that they will regress and end up being a mediocre team. I'm still sticking with the Redskins as the biggest challenger right now. I picked them to win the NFC East. Nothing I've seen has led me to believe that they won't make that run. I know they've underachieved for me. They've lost to the Lions yesterday, 20-17, or on Sunday, 20-17. They head now to Wembley Stadium in London to face the Bengals next. That could be a very tough game, but they're still a relatively well-built team. They've had a few injuries, which haven't helped, but I think they have a good quarterback in Kirk Cousins. I think he has some terrific weapons. Sometimes they can run the ball. That might be their Achilles heel, as it's very up and down. Their Matt Jones-led rushing attack as to whether they can actually get it done. Their offensive line has some questions as well, but I think the experience they had last year, adding into the weapons they have this year, I still do think they are likely to climb to the 9-win or so echelon and, you know, maybe threaten the Cowboys down the road. But, you know, the Giants have that chance. They certainly have the weapons, but they are going to have to play much, much better really for the rest of the season. They've just, like I've said earlier and often in this podcast, they have very much underachieved. They come back in a couple of weeks. They face the Eagles. That would be a great chance for them to get a step back up in this division race. The Eagles head to the Cowboys next Monday night. That will be a huge game. The Cowboys beat the Eagles. They will open up an enormous lead at the midpoint or near the midpoint of the season. So that'll be a big game to watch while the Giants are on their bye week. We won't have a show next week because of the Giants being on their bye week, but you can find all of our Giants coverage. We'll keep you informed either by following me on Twitter at RVACianoSNY or by checking out SNY.tv/Giants or SNYGiants.com. And, of course, all our shows like Football Night in New York as well keep you informed on what's going on during the bye week. There should be lots, some Josh Brown news, maybe a Jerry Reese press conference, and who knows what else as the Giants sort of try to regroup and head into their stretch run of the season. You know, we'll keep you up to date on how that's going. Hopefully it'll be a happy second half of the season for the Giants. But in the meantime, enjoy the week off. Enjoy the bye week, either without football or watching other teams. And we'll see you right back here in 2 weeks on Giants Goal Line.
This has been Giants Goal Line, part of the SNY.TV audio network.